Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine, where we cover Georgia politics like Kudzu covers the South. I'm here with Scott Aikman, chair of the Floyd County Democratic Party, and joining us in a bit will be Mr. Tim Shiflett of the Chattooga County Democratic Party. What we're going to talk about a little bit this week is the Georgia's legislative session came to an end and what a chaotic end it came to. And then also we're going to discuss the presidential race from both sides of the aisle as it relates to Georgia. And if we have time to talk about a few other topics, we will, including an outstanding event last night in Somerville, Georgia, that Mr. Shiflett hosted. Scott, how you doing?
Very well. Thank you, David.
Yes, Tim will be joining us in a minute. The legislative session, it really was uneventful for most of the time, and then just in the last really 48 hours just blew apart. What are your thoughts on that?
You either plan to succeed or you fail to plan. In this instance, I would have to say that the governor of Georgia, who coming off his victory, not just for himself but the party in November of last year, you would think that this agenda would have been set in months ahead, weeks ahead before they started the debate. But unfortunately, apparently no one came to work until the last few hours of the session, and it doesn't look as if anything really got done.
Yes, I mean, I think part of that is Sonny Perdue. He had these commercials. Sonny did this. Sonny did that. It was all these, you know, things that I really didn't feel being a Georgian that had really been this big impact, but he sure made enough of the Georgia voters feel that they were. Well, he comes in. He has this what really is a landslide victory. Comes in. He has the power to do what he wants. I don't think you and I as Democrats are going to be real excited about it, but he has the power to do it, and he doesn't execute an opportunity. 4 weeks ago, the Atlanta Constitution, the largest paper in the state of Georgia, said as much, that he's not doing anything with this majority. He comes in, I think boat ramps were his signature issue, and he fails to even get those passed.
It's a crying shame. Earlier last month, we took a group of students to an event there at the Capitol, College Day at the Capitol, and sadly enough, you know, the students were very disappointed when we got there, and the General Assembly was not in session. And, you know, just like on that day, on many occasions when the constituency of Georgia needed their state senators and representatives, they quite frankly weren't. To put those ramps in across the state for recreational purposes, you know, there were real crucial issues that could have been addressed in this legislative session. And quite frankly, with the majority that he had in hand, he should have done something instead of do nothing. And that's exactly what got done. It was the do nothing legislative session, as far as I'm concerned.
I agree completely. And then getting to the when the, you know, crux of the problem happened, the Speaker of the House, Glenn Richardson, he's just very new into his term. I believe we're going to welcome Tim Shiflett to the show right now. Is that correct, Tim? You on with us?
I'm here. How you doing tonight?
Excellent. We, of course, you know, we're learning as we go. This is our inaugural show. Tim, we're discussing the legislative session and really the problems here. And just in the last little bit of the session, there was a real issue about whether there was going to be a tax cut for, you know, all property tax owners, or there was going to be a tax cut for what I've heard were not only seniors but wealthy seniors, which that was what Perdue wanted. And then, of course, I mean, we've heard, I guess, for months now about Peach Care funding. I'm not understanding if we had shortfalls in giving children health care, why a tax cut was so vital that we didn't necessarily take care of Peach Care.
And what you ended up with, David, in the last couple of days of the session was essentially a comedy of errors. The House passed their mid-year budget, then the governor vetoed it. Now the House is threatening to override that veto. The Senate has been sitting on the sidelines, you know, watching. The governor is threatening an immediate special session. Speaker Richardson said the governor, I can't believe he said this, but he said he bared his backside. So it's really getting ugly between these guys.
Yes, I think the Sonny Perdue has lost a lot of credibility in this, because I heard or read just on Thursday that a lot of the Republican leaders, maybe not the Glenn Richardson and Casey Cagles, but more of the activist leaders, were talking about maybe walking out on his speech at the GOP convention in May. One thing I'm curious to see, there was a poll done last month by, or actually early this month, by Strategic Vision that showed his approval rating at 57. I have a feeling that in about a week or two, if they redo that poll, that number could drop 10 points or more.
Easily. I think Tim hit the nail on the head when he said that the governor's backside had been exposed when quoting Speaker Richardson. You know, if I'm not mistaken, it seems as if the governor only got 5 votes from his own party to support his veto in the late-night session on Friday. And that simply is not what you're supposed to have when you're the incumbent governor who's had a landslide victory. You should have more faith as your party's leader at the state level. And unfortunately, there's nobody there supporting the governor who's now looking at his weakest when indeed he should be looking his strongest as the leader, especially the chief executive of our state.
Well, interestingly enough, David, of those 5 votes, actually one of them was a Democrat from the metro area. And just guess who the Democrat's wife works for.
I believe that was a mixed marriage between a Republican and Democrat, with his being Sonny Perdue's press secretary.
Something like that. I believe his wife works for the governor, something like that.
I think I read that. Well, Tim, before getting further in, you hosted a great event. I don't think a lot of people around the state have been up to Somerville to y'all's JJ dinners. I would say that it wouldn't be embellishment to say that y'all probably have the largest crowd in proportion to your county's population of any of the county JJ dinners.
We do draw quite well, David, generally between 150 and 250. We have had that many. And last night we had around 150 to hear Commissioner Urban. And we were glad to see everybody there last night, including you and Scott.
Yes, we made it up, and we only had a few miles to drive, whereas the commissioner had to come from south of the border.
Yeah, he flew in on a plane from the south of Mexico, jumped in a car, and flew up there. He got there about 10 minutes late, but everything went well.
Oh, I don't think anybody could even notice, because they were busy getting a fine meal and getting, you know, the energy from Chattooga County. I'm sure some of the people listening don't know, but Chattooga County is one of the few counties in Georgia without a Republican elected official, and never having elected a local Republican official. And particularly when you consider the demographics, Chattooga County is not Clayton or DeKalb County. It's much much more demographically unfriendly to Democrats on paper.
Well, yeah, on paper it is. We're a rural county of 25,000. We have a very small African-American minority population. But what we have had in Chattooga County, and I alluded to this last night, is the fact that we have had some real heavyweights in Georgia government from Chattooga County, like Sloppy Floyd, like Congressman John Davis, like Gary McConnell, or like Bobby Lee Cook. And fortunately, still all of our elected officials are Democratic.
Yes. Well, I guess touching back on the legislative session, I don't know if y'all I just read it today that not only did the chaos, it went from the legislative session on the floor, and then afterwards there was a big party thrown by some of the Republican leadership, and they invited the lobbyists, and two of the lobbyists got into a fight that included one busting the other over the head with a bottle, a glass bottle. Petty's, which is, you know, one of the major Georgia Republican or Georgia reporters reported this, and I mean, so it's not like just rumor mill stuff. I was just absolutely floored to see this kind of behavior. I think we may have all seen that in college or younger days, but for adults that are considering themselves professionals to behave like this was quite shocking.
Well, let me ask you guys' opinion. What is causing this power struggle between the Republican leadership of both chambers and the governor?
Part of it may be that they don't know how to govern. I mean, they're just so new at it. They have no clue on just not about the direction of government, just but how to do the process.
I think David touched on it there very importantly when he said that they don't know how to govern. The lieutenant governor, Casey Cagle, this is his first term in office, and having been in the state senate before, he certainly understands how it operates there. But who's gone is Mark Taylor, and his years of experience not only as lieutenant governor, but before that pushing legislation through as a floor leader for Governor Miller as a state senator. And, currently what you have is what they asked for. You have a Republican governor, you have a Republican lieutenant governor, you have a Republican-controlled House, so you have a Republican Speaker of the House. And, you know, quite frankly, you might expect this 2 years from now when possibly Richardson and Cagle are possibly positioning themselves for a run at the governorship in 2010. But, you know, unfortunately, it looks like Cagle and, to an extent, Richardson are more on the same side of this than the governor. And if I was a Democrat, especially there in the House and the Senate at this juncture, I would simply sit back and enjoy the view until things, you know, the dust settles.
What really may make it tough for the governor is the fact that the leadership in the legislature has those two magic words that they're just hitting him over the head with, and that is tax rebate. They just keep hammering him with that. There was over $140 million of tax rebates in this budget that he vetoed the other day, and I don't know how he's going to talk to his base about that. Do you?
I think that's where I'm not sure you're on the line with us at that point, but there's rumors that they're going to walk out of the convention speech of Sonny Perdue's. They compared him to one of the characters. I saw the picture of somebody off of the Harry Potter or the Lord of the Rings. I'm not big into the Dungeons and Dragons crowd, but apparently they were comparing him to, you know, wanting to eat fish out of the river because he didn't get his boat ramps. Like he was a, you know, pitching baby, because I think even Glenn Richardson even said, like, wah, 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 talking about Sonny Perdue. I mean, that's just, I mean, not always were Speaker Murphy and some of the Georgia governors on the same page, but they never went out in public and behaved this way. Because someone like Speaker Murphy or Roy Barnes or George Busby, they knew how to behave and govern.
Then this really sets us up for a big showdown in a special session, doesn't it?
It does, and I'm just hoping they don't throw anything in there that just trying to slip it by the people of Georgia on summer vacation or whatnot.
You know, I hope that the best that can come of the situation currently is just that, a showdown. Maybe we'll see somebody step up to the plate and show some type of semblance of authority or power in trying to look at the constituency of Georgia first, as opposed to their own personal agenda. But, you know, unfortunately, I believe what we're going to get is the lowdown. We're going to see the worst of both sides with no compromise coming into play. And the person who, quite frankly, is going to continue to look worst is going to be the governor. You know, you could expect this from a governor of one party and a House and Senate from another. But quite frankly, Georgia got more things done with the Democratic lieutenant governor and a Republican governor than they're going to do now with a total consolidation of power.
Absolutely.
You know, the governor asked for you to build it. He promised that they would come, but it's been built and no one's there.
Absolutely.
Well, I think we've talked about the legislative session, the chaos that it is, and unfortunately it looks like for the Georgia people it's not going to end, you know, this week or even next. Another thing that's really been heating up earlier than ever in history is the presidential race on both sides. And while Georgia is certainly not positioned to be Iowa or New Hampshire, Georgia is a top 10 population state, which means you have to come in here and raise money. And also there have been moves to make it more in play. I know the legislature, one thing they did was they moved the primary up to February 5th, and we've already started having some presidential visits, presidential candidate visits, I should say. What are some of y'all's thoughts on the race? Democratic side of the aisle first, Tim.
You know what, guys, as much as I would like to say we got a race, I still believe in my heart of hearts that it's Hillary Clinton's to lose right now. If it's today, it's Hillary Clinton's to lose.
I tend to agree. If it's more of a national primary, I do believe that favors her. If it becomes a state-by-state race, there are some different scenarios that would favor, I think, the next two candidates, Barack Obama and John Edwards.
You know, I would have to go back and look at 2004. And, you know, when 2004 started, you know, the front runner was Howard Dean. And, you know, the thing was he lost his momentum. And if you look at fundraising and what's gone on in the last few months, Hillary Clinton, yes, she does have the larger war chest. And, yes, she does have nice $11 million in funds she could pull from her Senate campaign. But Barack Obama has raised almost as much in a period far less time. He has enthused the electorate, and it looks as if he might bring potential voters into the Democratic Party that Hillary might not. Voters who could change the outcome of numerous elections down ticket if Obama's, you know, celebrity, if you will, at this time, does transpire to Democratic votes on down the line.
And speaking of Obama, about a week ago, and unfortunately I was able to go down there just because I like to see any kind of good politics, particularly Democratic, Barack Obama had 20,000 people, it was estimated. I mean, maybe it's 19,900, maybe it's 21,000, but still, it's a basketball arena full of folks. Someone just in the past week said to me, they said, do you think there's any other presidential candidate that could get that kind of crowd? And I said, well, I believe Hillary Clinton could get easily a five-digit number to an event, no doubt. But, I mean, I couldn't say with absolute certainty that 20,000 would be that number. What did y'all think of that event?
Oh, I heard of it. I heard it was well attended. Is he sort of in the rock star type thing to you guys? Is that what's going on with him? Is he a media star, or is he for real?
He's definitely a media star. He's very articulate, and his speech-making is just, you know, unbelievable. And when he was a state senator, he was the keynote speaker of the Democratic Convention, and he didn't disappoint.
I was there along with David in 2004 in Boston, and I can tell you, having gone every night as a delegate, there were two people who held the audience there at the Fleet Center in the palm of their hand. Not a noise was made when these two folks were speaking, and of course, you know, the charismatic Bill Clinton had everyone's attention, but when Barack Obama took the stage and began to speak, there was a hush that suddenly came over the audience, and everyone there literally hung on his every word. And, you know, other than that, what has Barack Obama done nationally to make a name for himself? And, you know,
there you are.
He's gone out with this celebrity that's carried off from Boston. I mean, if John Kerry, well, I'm sure, would do anything politically to have the momentum that Barack Obama left with, he might be the president right now if that was the case.
Let's be practical, gentlemen. Can he put the troops on the ground in Iowa to win the caucus? Could he upset Hillary Clinton in her backyard in New Hampshire? Could he win in Nevada? That's the first three places. He's got to beat her somewhere.
And that's where I think we bring in Edwards. John Edwards right now is leading in Iowa.
Right.
And then could he carry that into a South Carolina victory? I will say this. I don't know how New Hampshire plays, because I think Hillary Clinton's campaign would quickly tell you New Hampshire was not my backyard, because that's too far away just not to play up expectations. So I think New Hampshire is more of a wide-open ball game. Nevada, that's where Bill Richardson has his best chance to make his stand. So it's possible you could have out of the first three states, you know, three different winners, which then brings Georgia more in play because there's not a clear-cut favorite.
You know, I think you make a good point. I think things could indeed break down that way, but by the time you get to Georgia, you've had four different elections. You've had four different winners. Georgia might indeed be the state that narrows the field down to two or at least three competitors. We might see a speech at the end of the night where one of those four fundraising leaders comes out and says, you know, I'm going to throw my support to this candidate. In fact, it might indeed be an early bid for the vice presidency. I'm very interested, though, to see who finishes strong second in New Hampshire and a strong second in Iowa. You know, it's not necessarily the surprise of who won if that person's led for the last 6 months or 12 months, but the surprise might be indeed who finishes second, who went out when they had no support in the beginning and garnered the most at the end of the day.
Well, the guy in the catbird seat here might indeed be Edwards. He's positioned third. He's waiting on either Senator Clinton or Senator Obama to stumble, and he sets himself up as the alternative. If this thing comes south with three different winners in the first three states, look out.
Yes, I think, wouldn't y'all all agree that there's a top four, really there's a top three, Clinton, Obama, Edwards, then Richardson is the fourth one, and then there's a significant drop-off before you reach the other two senators.
Oh, absolutely. Yep. Name recognition alone, you look at Richardson, who's been a member of the cabinet before and who's currently – you know, the governor of the state. Granted, New Mexico is, I think, currently the 46th least populated state in our nation. But, you know, Richardson has a long list of credentials, but simply doesn't have the name recognition as Edwards or Clinton or Obama. Yet, he is so far ahead of the other two announced candidates that really I would think their hopes right now are maybe they're trying to position themselves for a run, you know, years down the road.
Certainly some of those. I think Dodd and Biden, this is their only chance, and it's not a good one at that. I did see that, like, Joe Biden is having an event in Atlanta, a fundraising event. So they're still staying out there, as bleak as it may look. I mean, this is a man, Joe Biden, that ran and had a much more credible chance in 88, and now he's such an also-ran, I mean, just maybe a little bit more than Kucinich at this point. Tim, what are your thoughts on those two,
Well, Joe Biden, bless his heart, he's been running since 88. This is surely his last hurrah. He's a good man, but I just don't believe the numbers are there for him. Governor Richardson's an interesting man. He would be a guy I would be looking at voting for, perhaps. But there again, I don't think the name recognition factor is there with the other superstars of the party.
I'm sorry, David. One thing that does interest me is, you know, Senator Biden and Senator Todd, wonderful people that they are, they don't have the dynamics as it appears today to appeal to the young vote, those who are 18 to 25, you might as well say the 18 to 30-year-olds. And that's really, in fact, might be where our nomination is decided as the Democratic Party. And, you know, Barack Obama certainly appeals to a lot of young folks, and other than just African-American community. Hillary Clinton has some appeal out there. I don't foresee her hopping on MTV and playing a saxophone. But, you know, Edwards, you know, he doesn't look his age. He's very charismatic. He, too, has a large appeal with the younger voters. So, you know, it might, if they show up next year and actually vote, maybe the young people of the Democratic Party will indeed decide the outcome of the nominee.
Certainly. I mean, if you can get out new voters that typically don't vote, that is like found money. Well, seeing that we're more Democratic, we're going to spend more time on the Democratic side of the aisle, but I think it is interesting as far as from a, you know, political gamemanship aspect to talk about the other side. What are y'all's thoughts on the Republican side, Tim?
I think it's wide open right now. It seems like Mayor Giuliani keeps shooting himself in the foot, hanging signs on his back that say, kick me, and he's really come back to the pack. This thing is open. That's why a guy like Fred Thompson's polling so well and hasn't even announced if he's going to run like that. The conservatives in that party are still looking for a candidate, gentlemen.
I think you're absolutely right, and you're speaking of his polling. It wasn't that he commissioned a poll. It's that across the state, in Georgia at least, and these county conventions the Republicans have, they had a straw poll. I know up in, you know, Scott and I's home county of Floyd, they had they didn't even put him on the ballot, and he was written in, if you will, to win the county. There were other counties throughout the state. I believe Gwinnett finished second without being on the ballot. It was just all over the place. Fred Thompson was like, oh, this guy. The person, the entity I feel the sorriest for if Fred Thompson runs is TNT Television, because with our equal rights law, you know, equal access laws, I don't know what that network's going to show if it can't show Law and Order.
Yeah, really.
You know, there's a lot of interesting dynamics for the Republican Party at this time, and one of the things that has to stick out is, you know, as a liberal Republican, Giuliani is the first serious presidential candidate that party's produced since Dwight David Eisenhower, who considered himself a liberal Republican. But in a day and age when the conservatives of the Bush administration, and especially those on conservative talk radio, say liberal ideology is dead in America, not only has the Democratic Party come back and took a majority in both houses, but the most viable candidate right now in the Republican Party is the self-proclaimed liberal who supports homosexual relationships and their rights. And so I think what's funny is that there is a void in the conservative far right of the party. And not only do you have people like Fred Thompson scouring for that leadership position, but you have other self-proclaimed conservatives to the right, such as Newt Gingrich, who has had to let a few bad secrets out recently about himself, activities that you would say were not very conservative at all.
Yeah, I know Newt Gingrich kind of stays there on the outside, like he may come in at any point and run. Another person going into this you know, season or before the real primary season started was John McCain, and he had a tough time convincing his party's base. to support him because they were leery of his Maverick image, which was what would make him appealing in a general. But now he's trying so hard to court that side that I believe he's become unelectable now. And for the general, I mean, just this week he was singing about bombing Iran. Last time I checked, we were at war with that nation, and nobody has an interest in getting a third, you know, Middle Eastern war in the same time period.
Well, I think that you bring up an interesting point with McCain because he's lost a lot of that core support that he had when he ran in 2000 for the presidency. He would appeal to many voters as he wasn't George W. Bush. But, you know, as of late, maybe he was positioning himself for a run at the presidency and indeed trying to capture that right-wing vote he didn't have in 2000, that strong support that he needs. But he has gone from one extreme of the party to the other. He's now the president's staunchest supporter on the war, up to the point, like you said, he's willing to go into a sovereign nation or at least bomb it.
Well, let's put you on the line here, guys, with this question. The Republicans historically seem to nominate their favorites. Will they do that this year?
If Thompson runs, I think they would get their favorite. If not, I think they're going to have to settle who. They may kind of do what we did last time and look at the most electable choice. I don't know who they'll decide that is at that point. But if they do, if some of the party's people go for the most electable, they could then alienate particularly the religious right base with a Giuliani-type pick, and they could be looking at a third-party candidate, which to me would be a wonderful scenario for a history-making candidate like a Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama, because then you are splitting the Republican vote two ways, meaning they don't have to get 50% plus one now.
I think you're right. And McCain's candidacy is very evident of what's going on in the Republican Party itself. Once a party with several known national leaders who could all vie for the presidency, including George Allen, who many assumed was the front runner at one time. Now his candidacy is dead in the water, so to speak. I think that at the end of the day, McCain will emerge as the Republican nominee simply because of name recognition and everybody else falters to the side. But, like David pointed earlier, I think you'll see Giuliani as a vice president nominee or at least get the nod simply because they want to pull away some of the voters. Let's be honest, either Obama or Clinton's going to be on the Democratic ticket. And if you got Giuliani on the Republican ticket, you'll weaken that Democratic ticket somewhat.
Yes. We're kind of in the final two-minute drive, if you will, after the two-minute warning on the show. And I think it's been a successful show. And anybody that downloads this as a podcast throughout the week, 7 o'clock on Sunday nights is our set time slot. We believe that'll be a real effective one. Some of the sports viewing will be over, and a lot of political events out in the field don't happen on Sunday, so this may be a winner for us, and we certainly hope people will submit questions to us throughout the week. But we're just going to, I guess, get a parting thought, and I was just going to go ahead and go first on the parting thought. Mine would be kind of a shot at a congressional candidate from the 10th District. While it was first rumored that Jim Whitehead made a very controversial statement this week, He did not make it then, but he made it about 2 months ago. He said that he was just tired of all the liberals at University of Georgia, and if it wasn't for the football team, he'd just bomb the whole place. Well, I just don't know in what week that's an appropriate set of comments, bombing a bunch of Georgia students just because you don't like their political events. That, to me, is the GOP outrage of the week. Scott, what do you have?
My GOP outrage of the week is I have a student that has come up to me who is a single parent who is a Katrina evacuee who works two jobs and has a child in daycare age 3. She's not been able to enroll that child in Peach Care, nor has she been able to receive any other kind of benefits to help her with the expenses. And she has written letters to both her state senator and state rep from this district, who I won't mention by name, but up to this point the state senator has never returned her calls. And I guess it's very reflective of General Assembly. Not only are they answering the governor's call or trying to work things out there, but they're not even answering the call of their constituency.
And Tim, you'll round us out.
All right. Right quickly, on Thursday, the Republican leaders of the Georgia House banded together to propose a complete overhaul of Georgia's tax code, replacing it with a fair tax. Fair tax, my eye. Terrible idea.
Okay. Well, I thank y'all for joining me. I hope y'all all come back in subsequent weeks. We may end up having more guests as word from the show grows, but We hope everybody out there in the internet world will join us weekly at 7 o'clock on Sunday evenings. Thank you from the Kudzu Vine.